Well, this is called Why We Stayed. If you're here, stay. All right, well, welcome back to the Why We Stayed podcast. Man, today is going to be a fun one. It is about 10:30, almost 11 o'clock here on the East Coast, but I'm talking to a West Coaster who woke up early, like super early, to come and to be a part of the Why We Stayed podcast. And this is, man, this is really a special one for me because this is the first person on the pod. The pod? Is that a thing?
Yeah, you can call it the pod. No, that's insider language. That's cool.
Excellent. Thank you. First person on the POD that has that is actually a Bills fan, a Buffalo Bills fan with me. This particular individual, he is not only a Bills fan, but he has been in youth ministry for so long. And he's not just been a participant, but he has been an active voice and leader, being so faithful and focused primarily on middle school students and continuing to grow and develop them into young adults. And I just want to welcome to the podcast, Justin Herman. How you doing, Justin?
Man, it's so good to be on the podcast with you. I'm a fan of yours, and I'm a fan of this podcast, and obviously we're both fans of the Buffalo Bills. So this is going to be a really fun time. I'm looking forward to it.
Dude, I likewise, brother. I am very, very pumped. Well, Justin, why don't you give us a rundown? Because, I mean, just straight off the bat, typically a West Coast person is not necessarily a fan of a small market team like the Buffalo Bills. What was your upbringing? I mean, did you always live out in the West Coast? Did you grow up in New York?
I grew up in Buffalo, New York. I became a Bills fan because the Bills are awesome, and I'm from Buffalo. I eat Buffalo wings, go to the Anchor Bar, go to Duff's. I mean, I'm that guy. So I left Buffalo for college when I was 22, and I never looked back. Went to college in Missouri and then moved to California, and I've been living here ever since.
Wow. That is wild. So, do you have family still here in Buffalo area, or?
I do have family in the Buffalo area. No, I don't, actually. I don't know why I said I do. My mom passed away in December, and so my first thought was to think of her, which is really weird still. But she lived in Buffalo. She stayed there. She passed away in December. My best friend still lives in Buffalo, and I consider him a brother. But other than that, I don't have any other family in Buffalo. So I only go back like once a year, if that, for a Bills game and to hang with my buddy. Until my boys are old enough, then I'm going to take them with me. It'll be great.
There you go. Well, you definitely got to hit me up next time you go to a Bills game because I am, you know, certainly available for that. But anyway, we can stop talking about the Bills. If anyone is still listening to the podcast that isn't a Bills fan, I'm impressed thus far. But Justin, why don't you share, man, a little bit about kind of your ministry experience? So it sounds like you went to college in Missouri, then you went out to California. How long have you been in church work? What has kind of been your primary focus over the years?
So I've been doing church work for a while. I went to, I was a leader in my youth ministry when I was in junior high school. I then left the church for a while, boom, boom, boom. So I was one of the ones who did not stay when I was in sophomore, junior, senior year. Freshman year of college is when I kind of started getting my life back on track. Was a leader in the church there, church called Chapel at Cross Point, which is a big church. A guy named Jerry Gillis runs that church. And then moved to Missouri to study youth ministry at a small Bible college called Central Christian College of the Bible. Most people have never heard of it, but that's where I went. And then from there, I got a job offer in Huntington Beach, California, a place I always wanted to live, and I moved there. And so in college, I did itinerant teaching, supply preaching, which is a big thing if you go to a small, you know, really small market Bible college. You know, most churches can't afford a pastor. Did a lot of volunteering. Got to test out a lot of my stuff. Did a great internship at Eastern Hills Wesleyan Church in Buffalo, New York, where I got to test out a lot of the theories, the things that I was learning. And then, the big opportunity, first job out of college. And people gave me a lot of, can you swear on this podcast?
You can do whatever you want, bro. That would be, okay. Go for it.
All right. So when I graduated college, because kids don't listen to this, adults listen to this, right?
That's right.
Okay. All right. I'm already rethinking. I don't want to swear that.
Dude, okay. At this point, everyone that's listening is like, oh my gosh, like I just want them to swear. But anyway, you know what? Don't feel pressure.
Okay. Whatever you want to do. You know what? All right. You know what? When I was in college, people gave me a lot of shit for going to
college.
Dude,
why did you just swear on my podcast?
I know. I'm irreverent. Okay. I'm completely irreverent.
Anyway, keep going. Sorry.
But yeah, they just gave me a ton of crap for it because a lot of them were like, oh man, the only way to serve is to be a bivocational pastor, you know, being a plumber and being a pastor and, you know, whatever. So people gave me a lot of crap for going to California and, you know, being in Huntington Beach and surfing and the whole thing. But I loved it. And so I didn't think twice about the naysayers. I left, went to this college, left college, went to this job and killed it there for a while, really enjoyed it, learned how much practical stuff I didn't know. Learned it on the fly. Had a really great mentor there named Ron Mayotte. So I'm just name dropping everybody.
Love it.
Worked with a great gal named Laura Powell, no relation to Kara Powell. And she was the high school pastor. I was the junior high pastor, which we were not pastors, we were ministers, which the senior pastor of the church always liked to remind us of that. But that is a story that's a story for another day. You're a youth minister, you junior high minister, not pastor. I'm like, all right, Presbyterian church guy. I worked there for a while and then got recruited out there to go to Mariners Church, which is a large mega church in Southern California. And I was there for like almost a decade. It was awesome. And then me and my wife, after my mother passed away, me and my wife started asking like, all right, what are we doing with our lives? Like, what are we doing with our family? We want to make new decisions. And so we decided to move and be closer to our family, or her family who lives in Riverside. And I went and took a job at a church there, which blew up in my face, could not have blown up worse. And at first I was really, you know, hurt by it, really upset by it. You know, I've talked about it a bunch on different podcasts, so it all depends like where you listen to this story.
Sure.
Because if you listen to them all in chronological order, like you get a different take every time. So, you know, and it depends, you know, if it's recorded, it depends when it's published. So like if you took them all in chronological order, so like this will be the most recent time I talk about it. And you know, as recent as last night, I feel so much clarity around why this whole thing blowing up in my face actually was probably a really good thing. And I'm sure we'll talk about that soon, but that's kind of the deal.
Yeah, man. And I mean, it sounds like you've had kind of two iterations of the why we stayed or why you left kind of things. I mean, you had mentioned earlier on in your breakdown of your story, there was a window of time when you were a college student or kind of around that age where you said that you did leave and then you went bum, bum, bum or whatever. But like, maybe share a little bit more about what was that like? Because I think there's probably a lot of people listening today that maybe have left church or maybe they've left faith and, you know, or perhaps there's people listening who have kids that have, or who have friends that have left the faith. And again, hearing your story, you came back, but man, there was this moment where you did in fact leave. Just share a little bit about that.
Well, I was at a church, the youth pastor, so I'm going to be very blunt about it. The youth pastor was having sex with some of the girls in the youth group. It came out. It was a huge deal. And it totally tore up my faith. Wow. And I remember the day that that I just heard Satan whisper in my ear, man, if that guy can't do it, there's no way you're going to be able to do it. And,
wow.
And that was just all the nudge I needed to say, you know what? If this guy can't do it, how can I do it? Like, screw this thing. And I stopped going to church. I was really hurt, really angry. You know, looking back on it as an adult now, you know, looking back at 16-year-old Justin, you know, maybe I was looking for an excuse to leave the church. I don't think that was it. I think that I put too much faith in this youth pastor and not enough faith in God. I think is the real answer, the honest answer, that I would looked at this guy as the infallible youth pastor dude, and then when he imploded, I imploded right along with him because I was attached to him. I wasn't attached to Jesus, so that's just the truth of it. So that whole thing was definitely a thing. I started going back to church when I was a freshman in college. A good friend of mine, he went to Moody Bible Institute. He invited me on a road trip that totally, totally changed my life, completely changed my life. Just gave me a chance to get out of Buffalo, out of some of the poor decisions I was making. I had just cheated on my girlfriend in a very public way. And you know, this is before the Instagrams and the Facebooks. So the word just is spreading through text messages to people.
Sure.
And it was just the worst. It was the worst. I regretted it. I feel terrible about it. I was such a scumbag. My mom was embarrassed of me. I mean, she was angry at me because my girlfriend at the time came to my house and like confronted me about my cheating. And I wasn't home, but my mom was home. And so she told my mom everything. And when I got home, like, you know, my girlfriend sitting there and my mom sitting there, and they're both pissed at me. And It's just a whole long story. But I went on a road trip literally the next day, and I did not want to go. I brought some of my porno magazines with me. I put them in my my pillowcase because I wasn't a Christian. Like, so people who aren't Christians do the things that people who aren't Christians would do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, I brought some of my Playboys with me, and he found them, and he like threw them in the trash before he got on the road trip. So when I went looking for them, he was like, "What are you looking for?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I'm like looking for some stuff." Oh, he's like, "Are you looking for the porno magazines that I threw in the trash?" I'm like, "Did you really?" Like-? But this guy's one of my best friends. He was in my wedding. I was in his wedding. Like, we're really close. But we went on this road trip that totally transformed my life, gave me a chance to look outside myself for a second and really hear God's voice, that he had a plan for me. I said to stop screwing around. And that's what got me back in the church.
Wow. Wow. Well, I mean, there's so much we could unpack there. I mean, I think, first off, I would imagine that there's probably not a ton of people that have that kind of experience where, you know, there was a significant moral failing with that particular pastor that you were really connected with. I mean,
yeah, that's rare.
Again, but maybe some that are listening have had that connection where they actually have left the church because the pastor was proclaiming something, but his real life said something else. And whether it was drastic and it was really morally unjust, or maybe it was something financial, or maybe it was something, you know, whatever it may be, I think what you said that I'd love to highlight is you said that you would attach your faith in a person rather than in God, or maybe 100%. You know, something along those lines. And I think it sounds like you started taking this, you know, this path just towards destruction, right? Where you were just deciding, I'm going to kind of live it on my own, my life. I do want to ask you, man, I think there's such an interesting kind of process when that happens, because, you know, I've heard preachers say a phrase like, you've been marked. You know, once you commit to God, you've been marked. And what I would assume that means is then when you choose to kind of reengage in the world, what happens is there's conviction where there used to not be conviction. And now there's, I don't want to say fear, but there's almost this like, you know, this almost that moment with your ex-girlfriend and your mom, right? You almost have this constant feeling of, oh man, I'm letting God down. Oh my gosh, I'm letting myself down. I know I shouldn't be doing this. Did you feel any of that? Or do you feel like you were just in this totally reckless, like, who cares what I'm feeling? Like, I'm just going after what I want.
You know, during that time, I said, F the world. Okay, I was just like, whatever. I mean, when you tie your faith to a person, I mean, really imagine that. You tie your faith to a person. So everything you believe about God, everything you believe about faith, everything you believe about all the decisions you've been making, you tie it to a person. And when that foundation crumbles, what happens to everything that was built on it? Well, of course, that stuff crumbles too. So when everything crumbled for me, I was just like, screw all this. I started hanging out with girls more. And, you know, I used to have really simple rules, that all instilled by my mom. Don't have sex before you're married. You know, don't drink.
Right.
Don't do drugs. So two out of those three, I like screwed that up in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I was started having sex with girls and I started drinking. I remember my first night drinking, I was drinking, I just drank a bunch of Sky vodka and then I drove home. Like, I was a complete mess, 17 years old. Like, I was a complete mess. It was a disaster. But I just didn't care about any of that stuff. And so even when I was confronted with it, that was my first time through the 3-year process where I felt any kind of guilt for what I had done. And I don't know why that was. Maybe because my mom knew all the shenanigans I was doing.
Right.
I think it's because I actually really cared about this girl I was dating. This girl was a really sweet, nice girl. And I think what I did to her was really terrible. I messed around with one of her friends. And I felt really bad about that. Like, when I was confronted with it finally, I felt really bad about that because it's like, oh gosh, I kind of care about this person and like I really hurt them and like I feel bad about that. And and that was one of the first moments during that 3-year process where I had any kind of emotion like that at all. So when I was away on this road trip and I was faced with that regret and that emotion is what helped kind of kick me back on track.
Right, right. Well, one of the things, man, that's interesting about your story, and Justin, thanks for sharing the detail too, because I think that there's, again, probably some people listening where it's like, either they have been cheated on, or maybe they've cheated, or maybe they're just in a place where they're kind of finding themselves in any bits of those details. So thank you for sharing that. But man, I've got to believe that there must have been a shame component that kept you from trying to reengage church as well. I mean, not that you even were interested in church just yet, but the more that you share this story, I'm like, how did a guy like that, who was going through all this stuff, you had this terrible youth pastor that had this big moral public failing, your name starts to almost get tarnished in your hometown, your mom's disappointed, you feel all this shame. How does a guy like that go from rejected, hate the church, don't believe this garbage, to being a pastor for the past 10 years in youth ministry? Like, when did that happen? When does that pivot start to move for you?
Yeah, that's a paradox. So you have to go back a little bit real quick. When I was a kid, I had a great pastor. His name was Stanley Messer. He's since passed away. Really great guy. When I first started going to church, I was 8 years old. I grew up Jewish. First started going to church 8 years old, and he took an interest in me. I didn't have a dad, and he would go on pastor calls, and I would go with him. So my mom would do like these women Bible studies, and she would bring me because she didn't want to leave me at home like some latchkey kid. So she'd bring me, and he would say, well, you know, dress up nice, you know, wear a suit, and we're going to go visit some congregants of the church. We're going to do home visits, which is something that's completely missed on this generation.
Yep.
But that's what I learned. Like, that was the foundation of my learning. And so I would sit there and not really say a word, but just experience the whole thing, being in someone's home, you know, having a meal with them, talking with them, and just kind of watching him do his thing. It made a long lasting impression on me in my philosophy of ministry.
Wow.
And he gave me opportunities. The first time I ever spoke on a microphone was at that church. I read 1 John 4:7-16, which is the scripture reading for that Sunday. It's a very old school church.
Yeah.
And I got up there and I freaking read the scripture, and I had a little box that I stood on. I was the only kid that ever did it. So he understood something vital, which was give young people opportunities. Like he understood that, and he actually lived that out. So there was an original calling that I never abandoned. Mm. I mean, it took me a while to take hold of it. So there's part of me that walks into the church with not hubris, but with a sense of, okay, this is a place where messed up people can be, and it's okay to be messed up here.
Yeah.
So I don't have to feel bad of all the messed up stuff I've done, because they read a book that some of their star characters are
good,
like the
man.
The worst of the worst. So that's part one of it. Part two of it, anyone who wants to give me crap, they need to take a look in the mirror. And nobody's willing to say that, but I am. You know, if someone's to look at me and be like, oh man, I can't believe you showed your face around here. Like, oh, I can't believe, like, you know, don't you know what you've done? I have absolutely no problem looking at them being like, yeah, bro, you know what I did, because like I do it, you know, balls to the wall. Let's hop into your phone history. Like, let's hop into your thought life, scumbag. You're going to shame me. Like, I'm going to shame you 10 times worse. Like, so there's a real dark part of me, but I'm just being honest that anyone who says, I think there's a Bible verse about this, right? The person who has who's looking at the speck in someone else's eye, but missing the plank in their own eye.
Right.
I have no reservation with that guy. And so that's a big part of it too. Like, there's a confidence I have.
Mm.
So with the shame, it's equal part, or probably more so, confidence in Christ that he wants me here. Like, I belong here. Yeah, I've made mistakes. That's why he died on the cross. If the stuff I did wasn't that bad, then he didn't need to go to the cross for me. He could have just hung out. He could just be like, oh man, like, you're good. Like, you know, you're not that bad. Like, if that was the case, then he wouldn't need to have gone to the cross. Well, he needed to go to the cross because I am that bad. So if he was willing to do that, he wants me to be there in church. He wants me to be part of this.
Yeah, and Justin, one of the things that you said that I just want to quickly highlight before we get into your most recent church transition and all that
you
made a statement that I thought was so incredibly clear and pivotal, and it was this, that before the moral failing thing of your previous youth pastor, you said that you had a foundation in your youth, a pastor in your youth, that gave you opportunity, and you really began to feel like this call of God on your life when you stepped into those opportunities and all that stuff. And yes, there was life that happened, and yes, there was you leaving the church and going and doing your thing, But man, what incredible hope that your calling doesn't stop calling, and that even when you choose to be faithless, or even when you choose to kind of go pursue the things of the world, I mean, your example is, even in the midst of you pursuing that, you went on some random road trip and all of a sudden the calling called again. And there you were with the opportunity to pick that up and to respond to that call. And man, I just, again, as you're sharing a little bit about your story, I've just appreciated your raw and real responses, because this is real life, and people that maybe aren't sitting in church on a weekly basis, they don't know that the church is filled with imperfect people. They think that it's filled with all these people that are going to shame them and that are going to come down on them. And I think it's so refreshing to hear, you know, kind of that portion. So to give us a quick recap, you know, all of that went through. You went to Bible school. You went out. You decided to be a pastor out there.
Yep.
Obviously, as you shared that. The most recent passing of your mom this past December kind of caused you and your wife to say, hey, well, we're gonna go to this other church. It's a little bit closer to her family.
Yeah.
You made a comment earlier in the podcast where you said that it kind of blew up in your face.
Oh yeah.
What does that mean? And how in the world, after all that you just shared, you then finally go, you commit your life, you know, commit 10 years of your life to ministry. You then go to this church to be close to home. I mean, your motives are good. Everything's good. And then it blows up in your face. Explain.
Do you know what catfishing is? You know what you ever watch that show on MTV, Catfish?
Yeah.
Okay, you know what it is, right?
I can't wait to see how this goes. Yeah.
No. Well, it's a catfish story of the church. The church looked one way during the interview process. It looked one way, you know, online. It looked one way, you know, even when I talked to certain staff. But then there were other people I talked to that were massive red flags. And I looked past all of it. And when I got there, it's like, holy crap, I was catfished. Like, this is not what I thought it was going to be. I wasn't who they thought I was going to be. So it goes both ways, and not just on them. They thought I was like this leader who was done being with students, who was ready to be in a managerial role behind a desk. I don't know why they thought that, but that's what they thought. And so, like, that's what they thought they were getting. There were a lot of red flags that I looked past because I needed a job or wanted a job or whatever. And it all blew up in my face. Like, it's just no other way to say it.
Yeah.
So that was lived out by us probably 5 months in. I got a brand new boss, which, if you're getting new bosses like 5 months into a job, it's like, okay, what the heck's going on here? And like 2 months in, the whole creative team at the church resigned. Like, all five, there's six people on the creative team. All six of them resigned and started their own company. And I didn't know any of these people, so I had no emotional connection to them at all. But I was sitting there and I'm like, that's weird, right? Like, that's weird, right?
Yeah.
Like, six people quietly conspired secretively to leave the church, and then they executed their plan and it blindsided everyone. That's weird, right? And, yeah. And the answer is yes. Of course it's weird. Like, yeah, it's totally strange. But, like, no one there thought it was weird. They were all like, oh, my gosh, this is just, you know, so sad. I'm like, no, I think it's more than sad. Like, this is, like, a symptom of, like, a big issue, right? Like, but I was new on staff, so it's like, I don't know. And then I got a new boss, and that was a train wreck. And, you know, he was, you know, it was just really tough. He was the care pastor who knows nothing about youth ministry, but yet he was in charge of family ministry. Later, one of the executive pastors opened up to me about a lot of stuff. And one of the things they opened up to me about was, yeah, we kind of just put him in charge because we wanted to just stretch him as a leader. And it's like, okay, but what about what's best for students and families? Well, that was kind of second tier to stretching him as a leader and giving him opportunity. And it's like,
wow.
Oh gosh, guys, you guys are like, for a bunch of kids who are 23, 24, you know, whatever. But I didn't leave Mariners to come be part of your weird leadership experiment. And so the whole thing was odd. And then 6-7 months in, we started talking like, hey, I'm unhappy. It feels like you're unhappy. Here, expectations. Nobody's meeting the expectations we're setting. Now is where I really want to do the good stuff. We got pulled in. He pulled me in on a Monday and said, hey, we're probably going to let you go tomorrow. We just want to let you know. We're going to give you a heads up that we're probably going to let you go tomorrow. And I'm like, are you serious? Like, okay. And honestly, I went home kind of frustrated. but also feeling there's a little bit of a weight off my shoulders because it's like, I hate being here. Like, this is the worst, this is the worst job. And then the next day I went in and they let me go. And it was really hard. Being let go was really hard. I look back at it now with, if you were to listen to a podcast I did, because I've talked about this a bunch. You know, there were really, especially the episode you're talking about, episode 54 on my podcast, to talk about it. And it was like, we recorded that the day after I was fired.
Dude, so that so one good, is, yeah.
Yeah, it's very raw, very real. But now looking back months later, it's like, I just feel a lot more easy going about it. You know, I'll get more to it later. I've settled the spot now. I'm good now. But
sure.
You know, I just walked away and I was embarrassed. I was bummed. Like, I had to call my father-in-law and tell him, which, you know, my father-in-law is a part of the story. I'll get back to him later. But I had to call people and tell him. You had to call Kurt, you know, who I do the podcast with, and tell him that was tough. I had to call CIY. CIY is a podcast partner for the podcast. I had to call them and tell them, like, hey, I just got let go. It was really a tough thing, but it completely punched me in the face because I was at Mariners for like a decade. I was killing it there. I was having a blast. And my team was great. Dude, I'm doing a wedding for one of the interns we had. I had a great thing going at Mariners, and then I left there, and then I can't make it 9 months at the next place. Well, why is that? Well, it was a leadership issue, and it was my issue, but I was unwilling to resolve it. And they couldn't help me figure it out either. Like, they didn't have the time or space for it. It was
whatever. Sure.
But, you know, the no excuses, extreme ownership, the, hey, I can't answer for what everyone else is doing, but I'm going to answer for what I'm doing. That great style of leadership has definitely impacted me in a big way. Has helped me with this next job I have, which I took a job doing sales at my buddy's company, which is completely outside the box. It's fire, flood, restoration company. Okay.
Boom.
And it might not be forever, but it's for right now. And there's good money in it. And my buddy is the CEO of it. So it made it, you know, easier, not completely easy, because he didn't force anyone to hire me. I had to interview and do the whole thing, but it got me a foot in the door. And the first couple of weeks, I was just talking to my wife about this literally yesterday. And I've been doing my training, and it's actually been going really good because there's a lot of church-related stuff in this. There's a lot of intuitive stuff in this that makes it easier for me. But one of the big epiphanies I had literally yesterday was, and I said this to her, I went down to dinner with my in-laws, and I got into the car, and I said, I absolutely know why God has put me through this whole thing, which, you know, I don't want to get into the theology of, oh, does God make these things happen? Does he put it? I don't want to get into all that. Okay. This is something that happened. Romans says that all things turn to good for those who love him, you know, whatever. Yep. Okay. I got in the car and I looked at him like, I know exactly why all this happened. I know exactly why I've been going through hell the last, you know, 4 months, why we moved here, took a job, got fired from the job. I have figured out why all of this has happened. And the reason it's happened is because God wants to give me the opportunity to get closer to your father, which is my father-in-law. He owns a construction company, you know, working, you know, with his hands for a living. Like, you know, he's that guy. And I was the other guy. I was the guy with shorts and, you know, doing the slip and slides at church with goofy hats on, you know, working with junior high students.
Showing up at the construction site with sandals, like, yeah, hey, exactly. Pops, what's up?
Yeah, yeah, hey, what's going on? And you know, and I, you know, I never visited him at a construction site, though, right? I mean, I never, like, yeah. Those two lives are completely separate.
Yeah.
But now I'm in a job where I had to get OSHA certified. I have yeah, steel toe boots. I have a hard hat, and we're talking at a completely different level during dinner, because we're talking about stuff he knows about. I know that no matter how it plays out, if the only thing that happens other than making money, if the only thing that happens is over this time frame, I got closer with my father-in-law, it will all be worth it. Everything that happened at church, man. Me coming out to sandals, me getting fired, right. You know, the publicness of that. Cause, you know, I do a podcast and you know, I don't want to overstate, you know, my knownness.
No, it's all
but,
good.
But you know, you get fired from church, you know, it's a thing if you have a podcast that tens of thousands of people listen to a week. So it's, you know, it becomes a problem. And, you know, the embarrassment of that and just whatever. But man, oh man, if it's like, if if the only thing that I have to say after this whole thing is done is, oh man, I got way closer to my father-in-law on a level that we never would have otherwise, then it was a wild success and something I'll look back in 20 years and say, gosh, I was so thankful for that. It's so hard to say that 2 weeks out, but you know, years out, you know, 20 years out, I think this will be the thing I look back and say, thank goodness I was fired. Thank goodness it's I had that opportunity. Man. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Well, Justin, I think the one of the last things that I'll ask you here before I let you run is, you know, I think your perspective, of course, now is still fresh, but it's at least more of an elevated perspective. But man, you know, I think the part that I'm just hearing from your whole thing is for those that maybe have been engaged in church for a really long time and maybe they're not right now, it doesn't mean that what you did before was wasted. Or it doesn't mean that what was done before you were in like a better window of your life. None of that is true. Like you are in a window of time right now where you may not be working at a church, but God is working in you. And God is leveraging your relationship with work to now actually tighten a relationship that has needed work. And, you know, I think all of that is so powerful because God's going to do what God's going to do. And, you know, for us to, going all the way back to the beginning of your story, for us to grab too tightly to a person, to a position, to a church, to a platform, to whatever, if we grab too tightly to those things, man, it's hard for our hands to be open because they're so gripped on what we want or what we want to achieve or whatever that looks like. And it sounds like, man, you're in a place where your arms are open, and it's super encouraging to hear you say it. But I think, you know, I think my last question would be, you know, for those that are listening today that maybe they were let go from a church, or maybe they've never been on staff at a church, but maybe they were really a strong leveled volunteer and all of a sudden people just kind of left them at the wayside. What advice would you give them in terms of reengaging faith? What are some of the steps that you've taken in your own life since transitioning from a job where you got fired to now reengage even yourself back in church?
Yeah, I'll say a number of things. I've talked to probably close to 1,000 youth pastors who find themselves somewhere on that spectrum to the, I just got let go, don't know what to do, to I got let go a year ago and I haven't set foot back in the church. So I was back in church the next weekend after I was fired. We went back to Mariners Church. That was the church I worked at for years. They have a new senior pastor now, who I got to spend some time with on the podcast. His name's Eric Geiger. Really smart leader. Really smart guy. And so I started going. We started going back to church there, and it has been so amazing for me because I get to go to church and just sit with my family. I've done it like 12 weeks in a row now. Like that's unheard of in my life. I've never sat in church 12 weeks in a row. Since I was, you know, a kid, I get to worship and not worry about the program, not worry about what's next. So for me, it was really healthy. Started going to church. So a couple things. One, the church I got fired from, I may never step foot back in that place again. I don't know why I would. I don't need to. There's no closure I need to have. It's not that kind of a thing. I don't need to go back there. So I probably am not going to go back there. So no one should feel like, oh my gosh, the only option I have is this place I used to work. Listen, I have a kid with special needs. Like, you know, this is the church my wife grew up at. We moved and bought a house like 5 miles from the church.
Yeah.
We now drive an hour and 10 minutes to Mariners every Sunday. So if anyone had a reason to be like, you know, and special needs. So like we had a one-on-one set up for our kid at the church I got let go from. We had to transition him into a new church. If you have a kid with autism, anyone who knows anything about autism, change is not like their friend. You know, the people who like change, the ones who know autistic kids don't like change that often. Like that was all stuff we had to navigate. But here's the reality. We knew we needed to be in church. Well, why is that? I'll tell you why. Because when the church fired me, God didn't fire me. The church fired me. And the church is
very good.
It's a business. It's a bunch of people. You can have a great church and a great youth pastor and it not be a fit. And that's okay.
Yep.
And so, you know, when I got hit with that realization, it's like, okay, well, what does matter then? What is important? Well, it's important that my faith stays strong and that I still be a leader for my family. You know, my encouragement to the youth pastors out there that find themselves in that place is, you know, if anyone had a reason to throw up their middle finger and walk away from it all, it was Jesus. No one's listening to him. No one's believing him. They're all a bunch of boneheads. They don't get what he's saying. Like, oh, I'm gonna die and come back. And they're like, what do you mean, Jesus? Like, what do you mean you're going to die? We want to die with you. And he's like, no, like, you guys don't get it.
Yeah.
You can't die with me because you got to keep this whole thing going. No, I'm going to do whatever. I'm going to do anything I got to do to be with you, Jesus. And it's like, get behind me, Satan. Like, remember that whole thing? And then it's like, oh, man, one of you is going to betray me. Like, oh, my gosh, it's you. It's Judas. Like, this is crazy. Oh, man, I'm getting the crap beat out of me right now by the Roman soldiers. Like, this is nuts. Like, oh, my gosh, I'm hanging on this cross right now. What the heck? So that's what the church did to him. Yet he still said, you know what? Forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. We love them. And I know everyone wants to make excuses. But again, extreme ownership. You know,
yeah.
We all have a calling. Our calling is who we are. So, like, for instance, I'm about to, right after I get done with this podcast with you, I'm literally driving down to Orange County. I got a phone call last night from one of my former parents. Her husband passed away randomly. I'm not going to get into the details of it, but he suddenly passed away. They haven't told the kids yet. They wanted to know if I would come down to be there in the room when they tell the kids. And I know these kids. They were my students. They know me really well. I know them really well. So the thing with that is, it's like, okay, gosh, well, I don't work in the church right now. Well, okay, is working at the church who you are, or is it what you do? Because I know what I did.
Very good.
I worked in the church. But who I am, I'm a pastor. Like, yeah, I'm doing fire, flood, restoration sales, and driving around a truck and wearing a uniform, which is just totally weird, by the way. It's a whole side thing, totally weird. But that's not... that's what I do. It's not who I am. Who I am is a pastor. I care about people. So if you need a youth ministry t-shirt and a business card to be a pastor, then you probably shouldn't be a pastor at all. Like, I love Superman. I love Spider-Man. I mean, and Iron Man, you know, in that movie, the Homecoming movie, when he's like, well, I need the suit. Like, I'm nothing without the suit. And Tony Stark's like, if you're nothing without the suit, then you shouldn't have it. And and then you have the climactic part of the movie and he gets the suit back and the whole thing's incredible, right? Well, that's totally true. It's like, hey, youth pastor guy, girl, if you need to have an office and a business card, like, if that's what you need in order to be a youth pastor, then you probably shouldn't be a youth pastor. You should probably get some other job. And I know that's hard to hear, but yeah, really crappy things happen and it hurts sometimes. But if God wasn't big enough, you know, this is the last thing I'll say. My circumstances may feel the opposite of that, but I'm not a follower of circumstances. I'm a follower of Jesus. And I think that's the thing.
It's very
that,
good,
that's
man.
The thing that people need to be punched with. There you go. That's all I got.
Dude, look, that right there, that's the quote. That is the quote of the session. So if somebody bailed out early, you missed the drop the mic moment. So dude, thanks so much, man, for being on and again, for waking up early with us and just sharing a little bit about your story. And again, for those that are, again, former pastors or former youth leaders or whatever it is, I would just encourage you, man, don't follow your circumstance, follow Jesus and trust that church is very much a part of Jesus's plan and faith is very much a part of what pleases God. And man, just so honored to be able to chat with you even for this little bit of time. And again, check out Controlled Chaos Podcast. Give Justin a follow. Follow his podcast, man. He has incredible content. And thanks again for tuning in. And we will chat with you guys next time.
See you guys later.